makeup, hair dye, cosmetic surgery, pretend she's not who she really is, a woman, grown old, out in the world, buying radishes, cereal, soap, cookies. The old woman joins the riot crones. When people say you must be able to laugh at yourself, they really mean you should laugh at what they think you are, what they want to call you. If they think old women are ugly and foolish, you must laugh at that. You are to smile in recognition of their accurate observation. If you don't, won't do what they want, be what they want, you have to be ready to fight. Fight to be real. You'll need friends to laugh with when something is funny. Join up. We have t-shirts. Thanks for listening, folks. Remember, support your local independent bookstores, independent reading series, and independent radio. And that's it, folks. Good night.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
You are listening to our KBOO Fights Back campaign. Help KBOO reach our $75,000 goal by December 31st so we can bring you another great year of cutting-edge radio made by you for you. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to contribute today.
When I'm feeling a little bit low, I listen to my radio, 90.7 on the FM dial. It's always sure to make me smile. KBOO, boo! This is Michelle Shock saying howdy.
I've outlived so many of the men in my life. The most painful has always been, will always be, outliving Michael.
Poems from Outliving Michael, a new book of poetry by Stephen Rains.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Our news wrap crew took the U.S. holiday weekend off, but next week they'll catch up on this week's stories like the key marriage equality court rulings in Japan and the European Union. On this week's special show, we commemorate World AIDS Day with a reflection in poetry and the press.
Michael's days totaled 15,532.
15 members left red handprints on the walls.
But first...
Somebody sing.
Hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing. Somebody cry.
Why?
There is panic and an increase in mental health distress and anxiety among gay men and other men who have sex with men, according to Jeffrey Walimba, programs manager of Nairobi, Kenya's Ishtar MSM. Walimba says there is a lot of fear because people are not sure what is happening. What is happening is documented in a UN AIDS report released ahead of World AIDS Day entitled Overcoming Disruption, Transforming the AIDS Response. UN AIDS Executive Director Winnie Byanyima sees that sudden funding cuts to international HIV work, together with increasing attacks on human rights, have been devastating. The report finds that Anti-queer and anti-rights movements are growing in influence and geographic reach, jeopardizing gains made to date on the rights of women and girls, people living with HIV, and LGBTIQ plus people. Despite the current obstacles, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres' World AIDS Day message strikes an encouraging note.
The progress we have made is undeniable. Since 2010, new infections have fallen by 40%. AIDS-related deaths have declined by more than half, and access to treatment is better than ever before. But for many people around the world, the crisis continues. Millions still lack access to HIV prevention and treatment services because of who they are, where they live, or the stigma they endure. Ending AIDS means empowering communities, investing in prevention, and expanding access to treatment for all people. It means uniting innovation with action and ensuring new tools like injectables reach more people in need. At every step, it means grounding our work in human rights to ensure no one is left behind. Ending AIDS as a public health threat by 2030 is within grasp. Let's get the job done.
Not all UN members are in line with Secretary General Antonio Guterres in pushing to get the job done. Among the countries rolling back their support for HIV/AIDS prevention programs are France, the United Kingdom, Germany, and the United States. The Trump administration has even banned any official recognition of World AIDS Day by the U.S. government.
AIDS kills. Respect this, America is dying slowly. AIDS kills, word up. Respect this, America is dying slowly. AIDS kills, word up.
Outliving Michael is a new book by Los Angeles-based poet Stephen Rains. It's a memorial memoir chronicling Stephen's profound friendship with Michael Church from 1994 until Michael died of AIDS in 2000. The book is captured by Brian DeShazer's original sound collage using Stephen's reading of poems from Outliving Michael, juxtaposed with news rap reports from This Way Out's archives. The soundtrack is drawn from some of Stephen and Michael's favorite music.
His father did the books for Steve Rebell, got Michael a job as a bottle boy at Studio 54. Michael said, "I probably picked up 3 bottles that entire summer. He spent most work hours on the dance floor. I smile thinking of him, strawberry haired, sweating in a white t-shirt, bar rag in his low-slung jeans, bottle of poppers in his pocket as he danced. AIDS was already in the room, but not in his body. And no one knew anything anyway. There was just the dancing, sweating, sex, drugs, and disco." Michael told me the story only once about the time Ramon hit him. He acted like this was a secret not to be shared, but I could tell he had refined it, rehearsed it, so it wasn't the first time or even the 5th time he had told this story. They were in Spain. I can't remember where, but I imagine it was Rodon, the cliffside city full of twisting roads. The two of them left dinner. Michael, young and upset at Ramon, driving dangerously, erratically. Ramon demanded he pulled over. Once outside the convertible, Ramon promptly hit him. Then, in a mixture of Spanish and English, told Michael to stop with his dramatics. Michael said that moment changed his life, slapped him out of childishness. "If anyone had told me that a lover would hit me and I'd stay, I'd think they were crazy."
I'm Tori Christopher.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 29th, 1997.
provide care to a person with HIV in a hospital setting, and a government appeal in the long-running case of the so-called NEA 4, three of whom are openly gay or lesbian, who were denied grants by the National Endowment for the Arts based on a decency clause imposed by the Congress. And finally, another World AIDS Day observance is billed as the first electronic march on Washington, the AIDS Action Until It's Over e-march. President Clinton is...
Life is short. Death is long.
Action website, www.aidsaction.org. One press release describes the electronic event as one that will take most of the headaches out of traditional marching, including the inevitable disputes with police as to how many participated, and the unpleasant necessity of rows of porta-potties.
I've outlived so many of the men in my life. The most painful has always been, will always be, outliving Michael.
And I'll turn right back around. Give me one reason to stay here, and I'll turn right back around.
I'm wearing a necktie on my forehead, Michael said over the phone. Like Olivia Newton-John in Physical? I asked, laughing at the thought. Exactly like her. There was a new dress code at the travel agency, requiring a shirt and tie, but Michael rebelled. They didn't say where the tie was to be worn. I, a notorious rule follower, was concerned. Aren't you afraid you'll get fired? But Michael was confident. I'm the best agent in here. They can't get rid of me. He made himself indispensable. Could not get fired, no matter how flamboyant he acted. Gayness was reason enough for termination. They never would. They need me too much.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Brian Nunes.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 6th, 1996.
Men who get together to sing, and one of the things that does bring us together is the fact that we are gay, because we are the London Gay Men's Chorus. And by the very nature of a group of gay men getting together to sing, especially the choice of music that we do sing, we will be making a statement whether we choose to or not.
It's a pretty eclectic choice, isn't it? Everything from pop songs to the South African national anthem.
Well, we like to keep it as diverse as possible, simply because it makes it interesting for the audience to listen to. And as we are going to be singing these, we wouldn't want to be pigeonholed into just singing just church music or show music or whatever. By keeping it as broad as possible, it keeps everybody interested in what we're doing.
I'm going to let you go over to the other side of the studio and pick up the baton, and we're going to hear a pop song that I think hails from the 60s originally. This is the London Gay Men's Chorus with Dadu Ron Ron.
Met him on a Monday and my heart stood still. To do run, 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 to do run, run. Somebody told me that his name was Bill. To do run, 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 to do run, run. Yeah, my heart stood still. Yeah, his name was Bill. And when he walked me home, to do run, 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 to do run, run. Yeah, to do run, 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 to do run, run.
With members of the London Gay Men's Chorus, that was Petruk Trelawney reporting.
Michael bequeathed me his humor via payphone in the Atlanta airport. My long-distance romance over, I was flying back to Florida, single again. Michael didn't like him anyway. When I excitedly told him he had two cars, Michael asked, "Why? They're not shoes." As Michael heard my disappointment, I spotted an older man watching me, rubbing his crotch. I whispered the details to Michael, who asked, "Well, how is your herpes?" Confused, I blurted out, "My herpes." The man heard me, and his hand moved like lightning away from his bulge. Michael howled with laughter, fed me line after line of disgusting and outlandish diseases and situations. He was a long-distance ventriloquist, pulling strings through the phone line, giving me his quick wit and cadence.
My pussycat was scratching out on my back door. Scratched so long, poor pussy got sore, sore pussy. Sore pussy. Just a friend.
friendly little cat.
In his second to last year, Michael had trouble getting hard. Viagra was a miracle drug all over the news and late-night monologues, but his doctor said he didn't need it or sex, not so subtly hinted that Michael was a danger to others. I told him I'd ask around, bought two pills from a fast-talking drug dealer my friend Eric was dating, who warned me about side effects, upset stomach, abnormal vision, and to avoid grapefruit. I paid $40, a stretch for me at that time, and never asked Michael for the money. I mailed the pills and closed a note. I want you to be happy. I want you to f*** your brains out.
The kind of man that I adore is the kind of man that gives me more of all the better things in life that aren't free. Such things as Summer by the Sea, the Hamptons, Malibu.
After Michael's death, I rushed into a relationship, thinking I would avoid grief. Then, back in Florida, a whirlwind of odd jobs. Doorman, bartender, underwear model. While getting an HIV test, I decided to volunteer. The organization's demographic was black gay men, which must have made my white face a surprise. I worked with high-risk youth, didn't mince words or shame, used matter-of-fact messaging. I told hundreds they were HIV positive. It was hard. The pain was terrible. It was as if my life had been consumed with HIV. Friends were worried about me at my job and how it devoured my life. I assured them that I was fine, that similar to the Florida hurricanes I had lived through, the calm was being in the center.
We're affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 15th, 1995. In the U.S., ACT UP San Francisco invaded their local Republican Party headquarters on July 11th. 15 members left red handprints on the walls, waved anti-Republican banners from the balcony, and hanged in effigy California's Governor Pete Wilson and Attorney General Dan Lundgren, as well as the U.S. Senate's chief opponent of AIDS funding, Jesse Helms. Four protesters were arrested. ACT UP spokesperson Michael Bellefontaine promised that demonstrations would continue through the 1996 national elections to protest what he called the Republican Party's homophobic and AIDS-phobic agenda.
I wasn't drunk, just desirous of the dark-haired photographer with big eyes and romantic accent. We f***ed without abandon, and regrettably, without a condom. It wasn't a death drive, but rather a zest to live, and maybe a way to share more with Michael, but I did not want to die like him. The next day, I made calls to my doctor, the GMHC, and the AIDS hotline, asked about what I had read about, post-exposure prophylaxis, the treatment for needle sticks and condom breaks. I hadn't had an accident, but a lapse in judgment, and hoped they'd still help me. The treatment so new, my doctor knew nothing. My other calls got transferred from staff to staff. I was told I had less than 24 hours from exposure to take it. Found the medication and dosage, called my doctor, begged for a script, rushed to the pharmacy across town that had HIV meds, waited in a long line. When I think of myself at 26, that's what I see. Cordless phone in my hand, while I dialed for my life to live.
Did you bring it?
I forgot it.
Forget it.
Next time, don't forget it. And every time, make it part of the relationship.
A latex condom used consistently and correctly prevents the spread of HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, and may save your life.
That's one of several U.S. government-sponsored AIDS prevention messages that TV and radio stations began broadcasting January 4th, the strongest promotion of condom use the federal government has ever undertaken. Health and Human Services Secretary Donna Shalala offered this rationale for the Centers for Disease Control's new targeting of young people with messages promoting condom use.
Young adults need to know that the surest way to prevent AIDS is to refrain from having sex. but we also need to be realistic. By age 20, 86% of young men and 77% of young women report having intercourse, according to the CDC.
Although some U.S. AIDS activists wished the public service announcements were more explicit, they were pleased to see the Clinton administration taking a much stronger position on condoms than its Reagan and Bush predecessors.
You're listening to a sound collage featuring selections from Stephen Rains' Outliving Michael, read by the author on This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. The book is published by Moontide Press.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
We now return to this special presentation produced by Brian DeShazer.
At the end of 2000, I read Christy McCall had died, was hit by a boat while swimming with her children. I cried, talked about her to anyone who'd listen. I sat teary-eyed across from my therapist. He asked if it was misplaced concerns about the new year. Only now, all these years later, I realize it was about Michael.
Thank you for the day. Sacred days you gave me. I'm thinking of the days.
I'm Leo Garcia.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 8th, 2000. In Scotland, a lawsuit charging the city of Glasgow had violated Section 28 with its funding of gay and lesbian and AIDS groups was settled this week. Last month, the Scottish Parliament voted overwhelmingly to repeal the clause. In the settlement, the city admitted no wrongdoing, but agreed to write letters telling the community groups they could not use their city grants to promote homosexuality. As the groups see it, that makes no difference in what they've been doing already.
Michael gave me a copy of Dancer from the Dance, told me it was his memoir. I held the book and laughed. This is a novel by Andrew Halloran. But he said it was the closest thing to his own life he had ever read. When The Beauty of Men came out, Michael bought it at the mall, and it sat on his nightstand for years. The jacket, covers, colors matched his decor, and knowing Michael, this is why the book stayed there. The last Halloran book Michael read was In September, The Light Changes. The glossy paperback had a railing overlooking the ocean, blue sky, and a ghost-like figure looking out into the water. I didn't read it then, though I could have when I sat on his couch in those months I stayed with him in Naples, or on those long afternoons he spent in bed sleeping or watching TV with the dog by his side. His dementia frustrated him so much that he threw his cordless phone on the lawn. Those last few months were terrible. I tried to take care of him and I couldn't. Our May-September friendship didn't allow a restructure. He wasn't so accepting, and I, so young, wasn't a good caregiver. He painted his living room salmon because it went from bright in the daylight to a soft warm in the evening. When Michael died, the light changed for me. His walls lustered a little less. My life did too. 6 years after Michael's death, I held Halloran's latest book in my hand. The title still, even all those years later, aptly fitting. Grief.
Thank you.
A summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 3rd, 1994. The 7th annual World AIDS Day was observed around the globe on December 1st. Most events were peaceful, but some were not. In Madrid, dozens of demonstrators clashed with a handful of anti-abortion protesters carrying a banner which read, "Promiscuity causes AIDS." The AIDS demonstrators responded by spraying them with red paint squirted from syringes. According to eyewitnesses, police refused to intervene. Spain has the fastest growing AIDS rate in Europe and a vocal anti-choice movement supported by the Roman Catholic Church. In London, members of the direct action group Outrage warmed up for World AIDS Day on November 27th by storming into Sunday Mass at Westminster Cathedral to protest the Vatican's opposition to contraception. "Condoms stop AIDS, condoms save lives," they chanted, as stunned parishioners watched 55 helium-inflated condoms and a huge banner float up and lodge in the 123-foot-high central dome of Britain's main Roman Catholic cathedral. Outrage spokesperson Peter Tatchell said the 55 condoms represented the number of people in the world who would contract HIV during the group's 10-minute protest.
The stories of a life. 1. Michael accused me of doing my hair with a blender. 2. He was upset with his dog Daisy for in the walk-in closet, but the soaked carpet made him realize that it was his own, drunk from the night before. 3. Michael took me to his friend's birthday party, brought a very fancy lamp. Right before we walked in the door, he said, "Ugh, I'm going to have to put this lampshade on my head." And that's how he rang the doorbell. 4. 5 nights after a plane crash, a drag queen with a plastic airplane on her head threw paper airplanes into the audience while lip-syncing John Denver's "Leaving on a Jet Plane." Michael tipped her $50. 5. Michael told me my dancing reminded him of Elaine from Seinfeld. 6. Michael roasted lamb to celebrate my associate's degree. He told me that with my degree and a dollar quarter, I could get a cup of coffee. 7. I drank only white Russians with Michael, his drink of choice, and I haven't had one since. 8. Once, in the Galilee parking lot, Michael narrated a drunk man's bumblings as if he were Howard Cosell, describing every step and stumble until the man fell into the bushes. We laughed until the medics came. 9. When my 5-year relationship ended, Michael thought he'd never heard the end of it and praised me for only mentioning it 3 times. 10. Cool Joe's Barbershop advertised $5 haircuts. Weeks later, a salon across the street put up a sandwich board: "We fix $5 haircuts." Michael had to pull his car over from laughing so hard. 11. On Thanksgiving, Michael left a message on my answering machine that was just him gobbling. 12. On July 4th, Michael shouted a message on my answering machine: "Happy Codependence Day." 13. Michael had a side table filled with photos of his friends who had died. He called it the dead table. When I arrived late to his house once, I found he had put my photo on it. 14. When a pretentious filmmaker said his movie was a gift to the world, Michael said, "I really hope he kept the receipt." 15. He told me in each relationship, there's one person who loves the other more. In the best of relationships, each person believes they are that person. 16. Michael's days totaled 15,532. 17. Michael handed me a copy of Dancer from the Dance, said, "It's my life, read it." When I gave it back to him a few days later, I said, "He dies in the end." Michael said, "It's my life."
After you've gone and left me crying, after you've gone, there's no denying, you feel blue, you feel sad, you'll miss the bestest pal you ever had. There'll come a time, now don't forget it, there'll come a time when you'll regret it. Oh,
You have been listening to a presentation of selections from Outliving Michael, poetry by Stephen Rains. The book is published by Moontide Press, and the audiobook, as read by the author, was engineered by Lightwise Media. For information on how to get your copy of the book, visit Stephen Rains, that's StevenReigns.com. This exclusive feature was produced and edited for This Way Out by Brian DeShazer, with permission from the author. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Brian DeShazer produced this week's Outliving Michael special feature starring poet Stephen Rains. You heard music from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite and by Sylvester, Tracy Chapman, the London Gay Men's Chorus, Connie Vinette, Eartha Kitt, Christy McCall, Pachelbel, Judy Garland, Ladysmith Black Mambazo, Wu-Tang Clan, and Tristan Wharton. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Ivana Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at Post Office Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on 2MCE Bathurst, New South Wales, KPCA Petaluma, California, WBDY Binghamton, New York, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
We wanted to talk about the state of queer media in America today.
It's complicated. You know, we, as presidents of the LA chapter of NLGJ, we've seen tremendous amounts of change just even in the last couple of years.
Honestly, the first step is going to be, is there representation in the newsrooms?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Kuala Lumpur cops drop charges against 200 raid arrestees. The EU's top court orders same-gender marriage portability. And press coverage in the Queer Times of Trump. Those stories and more this week because you found This Way Out.
I'm Melanie Keller.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the 2 weeks ending December 6, 2025. A raid on an alleged gay male sauna sex party in the Malaysian city of Kuala Lumpur is turning into a bigger bust than officials planned. After arresting more than 200 men on November 28th, Kuala Lumpur Police Deputy Chief Datuk Mohd Azani Omar was forced to admit not a single one of them admitted to being a victim of exploitation, so the case is gone. The 8 p.m. Friday night operation in the suburb of Chau Kit was carried out with the cooperation of the Federal Territory's Islamic Religious Department and Kuala Lumpur City Hall. Omar told reporters, "We detained 201 patrons and 7 employees aged between 19 and 60, including 24 foreigners. Condoms, lubricants, and other items," Omar said, "that they believed to have been used for immoral purposes were confiscated. Same-gender sex is against the law in Malaysia. In the mostly Muslim Southeast Asian nation, those charged under 2 provisions of the penal code criminalizing unnatural intercourse and involvement in prostitution and exploitation could have faced up to 20 years in prison. However, 171 Malaysians were freed without charges for lack of evidence." Kuala Lumpur's gay, bisexual, queer men's support group, JJAKA, reports that many were held for more than 40 hours after a magistrate had ordered their release. Foreign men were remanded for 2 days and subsequently released. Muslim detainees could nevertheless be subjected to separate prosecutions under Sharia or Islamic law. Doctors, attorneys, teachers, and low-level government officials were among the detainees. The Education Ministry has already removed teachers caught up in the raid from their schools, pending the completion of ongoing investigations, according to the Straits Times. Efforts are reportedly underway to revoke the sauna's business license and shut it down. Barely 24 hours later, 13 men were arrested at an alleged gay sauna in Puri, Penang, as the crackdown on LGBTQ communities in Malaysia continues. The escalating anti-queer persecution is condemned by several domestic and global human rights groups.
All 27 European Union member nations must recognize the civil marriages of same-gender couples legally performed in any other EU member nation under a landmark ruling by the Court of Justice. The highest EU court's November 25th ruling applies even where there is no domestic marriage equality. A gay Polish couple's 2018 civil marriage was performed in Berlin, where one of them also holds German citizenship. Poland refused to recognize their marriage. After Polish courts failed to rule in their favor, the couple took their case to the top Euro court. All but five EU members offer some form of legal recognition to same-gender couples. In addition to Poland, EU member nations Bulgaria, Lithuania, Romania, and Slovakia don't offer civil unions or marriage to their queer citizens. Katrin Hugendubel is advocacy director for the European chapter of the global queer advocacy group, ILGA. She celebrated the ruling that, she says, clearly states that the recognition of marriage status is key to enjoying EU citizens' fundamental right to freedom of movement across the EU. Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk's promised Civic Coalition Party bill to create same-gender civil unions was introduced in October. However, President Karol Nawrocki of the formerly ruling far-right Law and Justice Party has promised to veto any such law.
Tokyo's High Court is the first to say that Japan's marriage inequality is constitutional. Four district courts have ruled otherwise, so the issue of opening civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples will now be up to the Supreme Court. The Sapporo, Nagoya, Osaka, and Fukuoka district courts have each ruled over the past 6 years that the ban on marriage equality is unconstitutional. However, Judge Ayumi Higashi's November 28th ruling upheld the constitutional definition of a family as a man and a woman and their children. The court said that any changes to civil marriage laws must be made by the legislature. The eight plaintiffs' demand for damages was also dismissed, 1 million yen, or about $6,400. Public opinion polls show a significant increase in support for marriage equality, but don't count recently installed Prime Minister Sanae Takeuchi. Japan's first female head of government insists that the family is an institution based around the equal rights of husband and wife.
The United Kingdom's Venerable Women's Institute will soon require new and renewing members to confirm that they were documented female at birth. Women's Institute CEO Melissa Green announced on December 3rd, "As an organization that has proudly welcomed transgender women into our membership for more than 40 years, this is not something we would do unless we felt that we had no other choice." They have no choice because of the UK Supreme Court ruling earlier this year that trans women are not legal women under the Equality Act. The trans ban begins as of April 2026. To Trans Plus Solidarity Alliance founder Jude Giatamaki, "It's cruel and a failure of this government to protect human rights, including freedom of association." For more than 100 years, the group has brought women together to learn, share skills, work together to become active citizens, and to improve lives in their local, national, and global communities. Ironically, transgender men are not covered in the Supreme Court's ruling. That means that while they are legally men, they will be able to join the Women's Institute because they were identified female at birth.
Finally,
imagine if your doctor came and told you that your quality and outlook on life could transform exponentially to the positive. Would you listen to that doctor? If you felt God's Holy Spirit surrounding you in ways that you haven't felt in years, would you have a sense that that might be something that God's okay with?
Reverend Dr. Philippa Fanouf had quite an announcement for the congregation of North Chile United Methodist Church near the city of Rochester in upstate New York on November 23rd.
I'm affirming and saying to all of you that I am transgender. And so the best way to put this is that I'm not becoming a woman. I'm giving up pretending to be a man.
Fanouf acknowledged that her announcement may still come as a shock to some of her parishioners, though North Chile United Methodist Church is already a welcoming congregation. She told congregants that the district would provide workshops and resources to support everyone concerned. She welcomed all questions and anticipated a few in advance.
Here's some frequently asked questions. Is the United Methodist Church, did he tell the district superintendent about this? What about the bishop? Is he okay with this? Absolutely. Absolutely. They're the first ones that I went to say, how can I do this in a pastoral sort of way to let the congregation know that I love them and that we can do this in such a way that we can stay in ministry together? Is our Methodist theology okay with this? Absolutely. Thank God for our revised this year book of discipline, our book of resolutions, our social principles that affirm this.
Fanouf may be thankful, but more than 1 in 5 congregations has chosen to disaffiliate from the denomination since restrictions on participation by same-gender-loving and transgender parishioners and clergy were relaxed in 2019, according to the United Methodist News Service. Reverend Fanouf honored her parents' request that she note their opposition to her transition, but told The Advocate that her 12-year-old daughter was her strongest supporter. The overwhelming support she's felt for most everyone else has been a comfort.
I have to let you know that this is now the third month that I'm in hormone replacement therapy. In that first week, going back to what I said earlier, is if the doctor had something that could increase your quality of life exponentially, I'm here to tell you that it was just within that first week that I was really, truly happy for it for the first time in a very long time. Truly happy.
That was Reverend Dr. Philippa Fanouf announcing her transition during Sunday services on November 23rd at upstate New York's North Chile United Methodist Church.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the 2 weeks ending December 6th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V. Stay healthy.
And I'm Melanie Keller. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with The Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to the iconic legends.
We celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. This week, we celebrate Christina, Queen of Sweden, born December 8th, 1626, who succeeded her father on the throne, ruling at the young age of 18. Ebba Sparre was her longtime intimate companion.
In 1981, the New York City Gay Men's Chorus becomes the first openly gay musical group to play at Carnegie Hall with their Christmas concert. And on December 8, 2015, openly bisexual artist and activist David Bowie's song Heroes was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame.
Now, let's rewind to some key queer moments. In 1996 in the UK, South Yorkshire Police placed a full-page ad in the Gay Times as part of a recruitment campaign. On December 10, 1948, the United Nations adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
And on December 13, 1973, the American Psychiatric Association voted to remove homosexuality from its list of mental disorders. In more good news, Buenos Aires, Argentina, approved civil unions for same-sex couples in 2002, followed by New Zealand in 2004.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Brandi Shazer. Stay tuned, more This Way Out is just ahead.
Dorothy Allison, author of Bastard Out of Carolina and numerous trashy pieces. You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
From the start of history, since a million BC, though we couldn't all be seen, we've been here. Even if we couldn't say LGBTQIA, all of us are now on way, we've been here.
Welcome to This Way Out. I'm Brian DeShazer. I am joined in a roundtable discussion by Hanson Bursick and Katie Carl, co-presidents of the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, and This Way Out's own associate producer, Lucia Chappell. Today, we wanted to talk about the state of queer media in America today. Hanson, why don't I start with you?
Oh, man. I don't know if there is a basic answer to that. It's complicated. You know, we, as presidents of the LA chapter of NLGJ, we've seen tremendous amounts of change just even in the last couple of years. The board of NLGJ LA at the tail end of the pandemic, since that moment, we have been really all over the place between layoffs and press freedom, dealing with the stuff both locally and nationally. And it's tough. I mean, it's a tough time out there. It's why our work is more important than ever. It's why, you know, me and Katie are really passionate about some of the initiatives that we're putting together to really elevate freelancers in particular. It's a tough time to be a freelancer, and now there's more freelancers than ever because there's more layoffs and there's less staff in newsrooms. So it's challenging. There are good things too, but it is... I'd be hard-pressed to say this wasn't a challenging moment for journalists in Los Angeles and beyond.
Before I go to Lucia, Katie, now you actually are a freelance journalist, like in KABC News, so you work in the newsroom, you work with news teams. In your experience on the ground, do you feel a change or a shift in how the company views queer journalists?
I would say I'm extremely fortunate with the company that I work for, especially in LA. I know it has a reputation of really supporting the queer community, from being the title sponsor to LA Pride to sponsoring us for our big event this year. In the newsroom itself, there are a lot of other queer journalists that are there. I think as a freelancer, you know, I'm more of a permalancer. is what people would call it, more of a permanent freelancer, meaning I work 5 days a week, 4 days a week. But I think what's interesting is when the convention for NLGJA was here in LA, the topic for freelancers was very much looking at where the election was. It could go one way with one administration, and it could go another way with a different administration. And looking at it as, well, if it goes with one administration, there might be a lot more work and for freelancers. So, you know, that could be an upside. And that was kind of the way it was looking before the election happened. Now, post that, post inauguration, it's very different because we weren't expecting for there to be so many new freelancers and so many more journalists being laid off that the work almost, there are maybe more stories to tell for the LGBTQ plus community, but now there's more journalists to try and tell it and more layoffs. So now the people who were working staff, who were covering different beats, now they are jumping into the scene of freelancing. And it as it's made it a lot more difficult, even more difficult than I think anyone was thinking it would be. So I think that's just for freelancing, at least, that's kind of how it's looked.
Well, thanks. And so, Lucia, you certainly have the longest experience of a queer journalist on our little mini panel here. What questions do you have for them? But my question actually for you, Lucia, is what do you think the state of queer media is in the United States from your vantage point?
I'm thinking that in a way, we've come full circle. In the early days of NLGJA, we were very much focused on getting queer journalists into mainstream media. And those of us, I would have to say that those of us who were always working in independent, non-commercial media were often looked down upon. What I see now, and I think it's very interesting that so many progressive journalists from the mainstream are now moving to independent platforms, Substack, YouTube, you know, all sorts of other ways of getting their work out there. It seems like now we're going to be racing to be independent as opposed to be racing to be commercial. But I wonder how the current situation is going to impact younger journalists who aren't accustomed to kind of gonzo journalism style that we came up in.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's really interesting because, like, when I said there are benefits as well, there are things that are good. You know, there is this rise in independent journalism, nonprofit newsrooms, and the journalists that are making at least part of their living off of things like Substack. I mean, we are seeing this rise, and it's a good thing. I mean, we want more independent, sustained journalists that are working in our freelance community. You know, I think when we talk about freelancers at NLGJA here in Los Angeles, it really is at the top of mind for us because we're the way that we are thinking about is how can we make freelancing sustainable? Like if the reality is that these newsrooms can't support full-time staff, which our ideal would be that they can, but if they can't, how can we make it so that these freelancers are able to live their lives, you know, to have and afforded, you know, healthcare, to be afforded, you know, the access to services, to be able to live here in a Los Angeles, which is, you know, one of the most expensive cities to live in the country. It's difficult. And what we don't want to see is our newsrooms being pushed out, our freelancers not being able to live here in Los Angeles. Because what we know is that local journalists tell the best local stories. And if those local journalists can't live here in Los Angeles and are pushed out to the fringes of our city, you know, we lose so much. And our work beyond beyond our events that we do, you know, trying to build community with journalists, we are now looking at different avenues and paths to support, you know, the journalists that are currently working, as well as, you know, provide platforms for emerging journalists, which is another big problem. You know, we're seeing less and less paths for young journalists coming out of college, you know, and J school. You know, we're seeing less paths for them to get consistent work now.
You know, what I was also thinking about is the independent journalism actually opens the window to how many stories get told, and whether it's a small story that wouldn't make it to a mainstream story or doesn't fill the gap of time. But it does open the window of how much of our experience is being told from our own perspective. But going back to you, Katie, how hard is it for a queer story to get selected for broadcast?
So again, I mean, I'm in a newsroom that is extremely supportive, and that is not the case everywhere. My most recent job that wasn't here in Los Angeles was in Phoenix, and that situation was not nearly as supportive. But when it comes to will those stories make it to air, the first step is pitching that story. So in order to pitch that story, you either need to have someone in that newsroom who is of the community, or someone who knows someone in the community, or people in the community that are pitching their stories to that newsroom. The second part of that is pitching it. It's not about, is that story going to be held for June, or is it going to be held for LGBTQ History Month? That's not the case. If it's a story that needs to be told now, today, it will be. For instance, one of the stories that I covered was possible ICE sighting at the Abbey. Now, we received, people were at nearby bars, and the TV screens in all of the nearby bars had ICE is at the Abbey was written on the TV screens at the other bars, not at the Abbey. Now, come to find out, it wasn't ICE at all. It was the LA Sheriff's Department. They were conducting a raid on, like, pickpocketing. It was an undercover operation focusing on pickpocketing and other crimes that we all know happen in WeHo. Those stories, they just become part of our daily news. In other newsrooms, however, sometimes they only want those stories in June. They only want those stories during LGBTQ plus History Month, if at all for that. So honestly, the first step is going to be, is there representation in the newsrooms? As I think, as a society, we're pulling away almost from broadcast media, some of those newsrooms are shuttering. Some of those newsrooms are combining with others, so the amount of jobs are diminishing. Broadcast journalism is still here. It's not going to go anywhere. We might change. We might not be, you know, on DirecTV or Charter or Spectrum anymore, or whatever the future holds for us, but broadcast news is not going to leave. And while those jobs are diminishing, they're still there, and they still need people, and they really, really need representation in those smaller markets to be able to tell the stories, for you to live in the middle of Montana and learn what their LGBTQ plus community looks like to tell their story. It's very, very important.
Thank you for joining us, Katie Carl and Hanson Burke, co-presidents of the NLGJA Los Angeles chapter, also known as the Association of LGBTQ plus Journalists. And as always, thank you, Lucia Chappell. You can listen to the extended conversation by visiting This Way Out on SoundCloud.com. And for the NLGJA, visit NLGJA.org. For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Melanie Keller and John Dyer V, and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written and produced by Sherry Lunn and Brian DeShazer. Brian DeShazer produced this week's Queer Journalists Roundtable. You heard music from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite and by Rachel Berenger and Shawnee Kish. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Yavanna Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on Radio Free Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz, California, WCRS Columbus, Ohio, CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
Tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
We know a KBOO membership is at the top